The following Dominican University of California production has been brought to you by radio.dominican.edu.
Welcome tonight to our Campus Ministry Big History Spring Lecture. Since Dominican developed the Big History Program, Campus Ministry, the Religion Department, and Big History Program have all been working together to provide a speaker each semester on the topic of how science and religion can dialogue within the disciplines to further our insights and understanding of the cosmos in which we live. Tonight's program continues our quest to provide students with new insights into the world in which we live through the Dominican tradition of caring for the total person, body, mind, and spirit. And so it gives me great pleasure tonight to introduce to you Sister Ilia De Leo, a Franciscan sister of Washington, D.C., and a theologian specializing in the area of science and religion, with interests in evolution, physics, neuroscience, and the importance of those for theology. Now, Sister Ilia holds a doctorate in pharmacology from Rutgers University, New Jersey's medical school, where her area of work and specialization was neurotoxicology. Her work at Rutgers included experimental drug treatment for diabetic neuropathy and the assessment of sensory nerve damage due to methylmercury intoxication. After entering the Franciscan order, she studied at Fordham University, where she received a doctorate in historical theology. She has taught science and religion at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, at the Washington Theological Union, as a senior research fellow at Woodstock Theological Center at Georgetown University, and currently she holds the Josephine C. Conley Endowed Chair in Theology at Villanova University. Sister Ilia is the author of 15 books, including Care for Creation, The Emergent Christ, The Unbearable Wholeness of Being, God, Evolution, and the Power of Love, and her latest book, Making All Things New, Catholicity in the 21st Century. And in 2014, she published the book, From Teilhard to Omega, Co-Creating an Unfinished Universe, which will be the basis for her address this evening. So please extend a warm Dominican welcome to Sister Ilia.
Well, good evening, Dominican University. It's great to be here with you on this beautiful campus. I have to say, it's my first time here, and very happy to be here. So this evening, the title is Co-Creating an Unfinished Universe. Like, why do we get a four-year education? Because we have work to do. And this evening, I'd like to share with you the vision of a wonderful Jesuit priest and scholar by the name of Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who lived between 1881 and 1955. Teilhard, as he's called by his friends, was a paleontologist. He studied human evolution in the Eocene period, about 56 million years ago. And as a Jesuit, he had deep insights into the spiritual meaning of evolution itself. He was eventually silenced by Rome because of his views on original sin, which he did not think was so original, and he eventually was self-imposed in China and spent many years in China in archaeological digs and studying the origins of humans. But even more so, Teilhard had a vision of where, not only where we're coming from, but where we're going. And that's what I'd like to share with you this evening. Now, the universe out of which all our Catholic theology is based is an ancient cosmology based on the Ptolemaic universe. So Thomas Aquinas and Bonaventure and St. Dominic all would have known this ancient cosmos. And Teilhard recognized that our theology, as we, our Catholic theology as we have known it, is based on this old order that's, you can see it's perfectly stable and fixed, and it's geocentric, earth-centered. And in this old cosmology, we built a theology where everything centered around the human person. You know, we were created good, but then we disobeyed God, and then we fell, and then we needed to be redeemed. And that's been our common story, our common narrative for many, many centuries. But what happened is, as you probably know from studying big history, Nicholas Copernicus and other astronomers began to realize that, guess what? We're not the center. We're not the center of this cosmos, that it's a sun-centered cosmos for Nicholas Copernicus. So the discovery of heliocentrism really caused things to shake up a bit. And the church was not happy with it. The church did not accept heliocentrism. And when Galileo Galilei said, no, it's really true. The earth is not the center. The earth is moving around the sun. The church said, well, Galileo, you should not write or publish anything more. I think you need to stay home. Do not text anyone. Do not call. And Galileo was placed under house arrest until 1984. So it makes a difference what you talk about these days. So basically we have, I think, with the discovery of heliocentrism and the rise of modern science, we have the division or the split between science and religion. Up to that time, and in fact when St. Dominic was around, that would have been unheard of. In other words, to study the natural world was to know God. With the rise of this new paradigm, now science could study the natural world and not have to call upon God to explain things. And that really began to shift things. Now what Teilhard basically said is that this division between science and religion really had an impact on the role of the human person in creation. In the old paradigm, we had a role to play. We were the center. And so we were, in a sense, the mediators of heaven and earth. With the rise of modern science, we sort of lost our place. We became, you might say, lost in space. And this little image here sort of shows that. To this day, we sort of don't know where we're going. You know, we have this sense of not feeling at home on Earth. And what Teilhard said is that we have become radically separated from the cosmos. And that's why your program here in Big History is really fantastic. And you're unique in this way. There are very few colleges, universities in the country that might begin a four-year education with Big History. And Teilhard would say that is exactly where we need to begin. Because he says there's an artificial separation between humans and cosmos. And this lies at the root of our moral confusion. We don't know where we're going because we've lost our place, you might say, in space. And so, you know, for Teilhard said this. He said, we cannot keep science and religion separate anymore. In other words, we can't keep them at odds with one another, which is how many people in our culture today still see science and religion. Like, why would you bother bringing these two things together? You know, if you're a scientist, you do science. You know, if you're a religion major, you do religion. But why should science and religion be brought together? And Teilhard said this very simply. They are just simply two faces or phases of the same complete act of knowing. In fact, there's no real complete knowledge if there's only science or only religion. You need both for the fullest act of knowing where we're going, so to speak. So, you know, just to take a look at our own universe, right? So it's not, we don't live in an Earth-centered universe. We don't even live in a sun-centered universe. We live in a Big Bang universe. And it's a fantastic universe, right? I mean, scientists today, they're hitting more and more upon the mystery of this universe. It has a very, very ancient beginning. So if you're feeling, you know, a little bit old at 18 and 19 years old, you can consider the age of the universe at 13.8 billion years old. Who could get their heads around 13.8 billion years? I mean, that's incredible. So it goes way back, right? To a beginning, who knows how it began? Did it begin out of a collapsed universe? Is this part of a multiverse? Are we just one universe among many universes? That's what science studies. What we do know is that things had take time in this universe, like maybe like a billion years for galaxies to form or planets. You know, the first stars after about 400 million years. So we in our modern culture, we're very fast. You know, we want everything now. But the universe works on deep time, very, very slow. And what we know, that the universe will continue on for billions of years. Not millions, billions. Maybe 7-9 billion years if the sun, you know, doesn't burn out. It could go on for indefinitely, maybe 100 trillion years. We live here a very, very short amount of time. Maybe 70, 80 years, maybe 90 years, maybe in your lifetime with good technology and better drugs, it'll be 100 or maybe 150 years. It's still a wink of an eye. And so scientists will say, well, is human life just meaningless? What are we doing here in this very, very large universe? Well, that's a really good question, you know, and that's a question that science can't answer. We do know it's an expanding universe, right? And it continues to expand at an accelerated rate. And we know it's expanding because we ourselves feel ourselves expanding sometimes with the universe. So that's how we know we're at least cosmic people. Now, you know that Einstein, who was very unhappy with Newton's laws of absolute space and absolute time, Einstein had a great imagination, right? He was a mathematical genius who could just use his imagination to begin to picture what would it be like to ride a beam of light at the speed of light. And through that thought experiment, he began to realize that space and time are not absolute, that they are indeed a continuum and part of the fabric of the universe. And then he also realized that, guess what? Matter is not something that's separate and substance-like, that matter is really a form of energy. And so he developed this little formula, E equals mc squared, and basically he's saying that, you know, matter and energy are equivalent. You know that matter can be converted to energy and energy to matter if the mass is conserved. So basically what Einstein said, putting this in our language, is we're energy packed into matter. And that really sort of opened up a whole new understanding of things that we're beginning to grapple with today. You know, one of them is the strangeness of matter itself, that on the most fundamental level of matter, what we call the quantum level, it's nothing like we can actually tangibly measure exactly for certain, because it's got this kind of elusive nature to it. You know, things can be wave-like and they can be particle-like. And what physicists tell us is you need to observe. You need to determine what something is. So we're beginning to realize that there's no, like, world out there. It's not like the stuff is out there and we just happen to observe it. Rather, the act of observation actually determines what's there. And that's a shift, even a philosophical shift, in understanding what reality is. So, you know, we're discovering today more and more from science that the world of being, even the word being, is no longer a word that really reflects the deep reality that science tells us about, that what we are. Rather, we're more like interbeing. And the fact is that we are sort of, on the fundamental levels of life, composed of webs and webs of energy fields of interconnectedness. So, and it's interesting because on our human level, we seem so fragmented, so disparate, so polarized, and yet science tells us on the most fundamental levels, we are deeply interconnected at the hip. So, you know, Paul Dirac, in his talk he gave when he won the Nobel Prize in 1933, he said, we are so interconnected, not just with one another, but with the whole physical world. He said that if you were to pick a flower on Earth, you would move the farthest star. And that's just, we look at that and go, are you kidding? You mean like my little action of picking a flower could actually have an effect on this cosmos? That just seems remarkable. And yet, what Dirac is pointing to is that our actions, our local actions, as our bumper sticker says, our local actions do have global effects, right? Cosmic effects. So David Bohm, a contemporary of Einstein, also a quantum physicist, said this, you know, we look like we are separate, that we are just, you know, separate societies and separate people. He said, but in our cosmic roots, we are part of an indivisible whole and share in the same cosmic process. And that's really rather startling, that if we were, in a sense, to invert the cosmic fabric, we would see that we are deeply connected to all people, all parts of the Earth, the cosmos itself. So, you know, Teilhard was not a physicist. He was a paleontologist and therefore one who studied evolution. And evolution is that third arm of the new science today that tells us that life becomes increasingly complex over time. Now, it's the word that really, in the culture and on the whole, it makes people nervous, you know, to think that we are coming out of evolution, or, you know, many religious people might say, well, I'm not related to a monkey, you know, this type thing. And so over 40% of the U.S. population does not accept evolution as the way that human life comes about on Earth, which is quite interesting in itself. But what we are saying that in terms of evolution, that we don't live in a static world, that it's a dynamic world. Now, you know that from your own experience. But what we're saying is that life has built-in change to it. And that, you know, not only is life constantly changing given sufficient amount of times, but that there's a process of lawfulness and orderliness, and life itself has kind of an inbuilt spontaneity. So, you know, again, if we look at our story of evolution, and it is a story, it's a narrative, and it's our narrative. It's not a narrative that's out there, it's actually how we have come to be right here at this moment in time. If we were to look at evolution as an encyclopedic volume of 30 volumes, and each volume having 450 pages, and each page a million years, we can then begin to see just where we might fit in this story. Volume one is the Big Bang, the story of our universe. But the story of our Earth doesn't begin till volume 21. That's 20 volumes later. The Cambrian period is volume 29. A few weeks ago, I was in the Pittsburgh airport, and there was this huge brontosaurus as I was coming down, not a real thing, the skeletons of it. And, you know, that kind of huge Jurassic Park-looking animal is volume 30. And so, we humans are in the last volume, the last line, and the last two words of this volume are Homo sapiens. And guess what? There's no period here. So this is not just our story. We are now in evolution. Evolution is occurring in and through us. And that's something that I think still many people have a hard time getting their heads around. Now, Teilhard was an evolutionary thinker. And I think, if anything, what he is asking us to do today is to shift the way we think about things. He describes evolution as a process towards more complexity. In other words, things come together, right? You know, things keep drawing together. What he calls the law of convergence. And as things come together, they form new degrees of relationships. I mean, you bring hydrogen and oxygen together and you've got water, right? And water is something different. It's a compound that is can be reduced to the elements, although it's comprised of them. And that's what he says marks all of cosmic and biological life, the law of complexity and convergence. And then he says, through this process is the evolution of the mind. And again, we think of mind as something that we have up here, but mind is so much more than just what's in our, you know, our little skull here. Mind is, in a sense, a whole field that includes our emotions. It includes our whole person. And he sees that unfolding of mind and the unfolding of spirit. And that self-reflective phase of it all is called humanity. So these three drivers of evolution for Teilhard, convergence, complexity, and the rise of consciousness. I was talking to someone the other day and they said, you know, consciousness is not part of evolution. Consciousness is just something that we have. You know, as if evolution's going along and here we humans just pop on the scene and, oh, by the way, we have consciousness. And Teilhard said, no, no, no. The whole thing is consciousness rising. Evolution, he said, is not just background to our story. You know, we're not just in evolution. We are evolution, now on the level of self-reflective consciousness. Now that just sounds like a mouthful, you know? What does that mean? But basically what he's saying is we are the thinking universe. We are the universe now on the level, on the human level, that thinks, that can make decisions, and that can is oriented toward the future. So in this sense, we can say that our most distant relatives would be the cyanobacteria here on Earth about 3.8 billion years ago. But here we are today, right? Evolution. We have gone from four-legged to two-legged, you know, to the Australopithecus and Neanderthalus. Now we have Mephaldus, a new recent cousin. And here we are as Homo sapien, thinking persons. Now, why do I show this slide? Because, you know, the fastest evolver today is not religion, in case you were wondering. The fastest evolver of human life and human culture is technology. I still remember when the first cell phone, this kind of gives my age away, the first cell phone came out, right? It looked this large, you know? Up till then, we had phones on the wall with cords. And someone said, you know, AT&T is making a new cell phone you can carry around. And we thought, that's incredible, you know, that you can make a cell phone that you can carry. And we're talking maybe 30 years ago. That has morphed and mutated and advanced within the last 20, 25 years to now we carry computers, right, in the palms of our hands. Our computing power, according to Moore's law, is doubling every 2 years. In fact, we're sort of maxing that computer power out. So this is what's so fascinating, is that we are evolving, but we don't know what we're evolving into. We're lured by our technologies, but we have no idea where we're going with them. So what Teilhard said is that we are integrally part of evolution, in that we rise from the process, but in reflecting on the process, we stand apart from it. So what he asks us to do is not just to study big history, but to reflect on where we're coming from in order to think about where we're going to. And, you know, again, he says, we are nothing else than evolution, now conscious of itself. He did place a big emphasis on thinking. In other words, thinking is not just, you know, just tell me what I need to know type thing, right? It's not just taking in the information. Thinking is, in a sense, experience, reflection on that experience, and you might say making a choice based on that reflected experience. And that, Teilhard said, is how we become artisans of the future. So he says this, reflecting in the consciousness of each one of us, evolution is becoming aware of itself. Isn't that a great saying? Evolution is becoming aware of itself in and through us. Now, what Teilhard said is this, as a scientist, and I want to mention this, he wrote as a scientist. He was not a spiritual writer, he was not a theologian, he was a paleontologist who saw deeply into the depths, you might say, of evolution. And he said, look, if we look at this long process, we see that there is, in a sense, a rising of consciousness. And by consciousness, he meant really first the flow of information between elements until it becomes self-reflective. So he talks about evolution as the rise of consciousness. Even James Jean, an astrophysicist in 1950, said, you know, the universe looks more like a great thought than a great machine. Mind no longer appears as an accident intruder into the realm of matter. Mind may be the creator and the creator and governor of the realm of matter. So Jean said the quantum phenomena makes it possible to propose that the background of the universe is mind-like. Or as the physicist Freeman Dyson said, did the universe know we were coming? You know, does it have a mind of its own? Is that mindfulness of the universe now our minds on a level of self-reflectiveness? What Teilhard said is not only are we the universe become conscious of itself, but here's the clincher. The universe is depending on us, so to speak, for its future. We are no longer the center of the universe, as the medievalists might have held, but we are, in a sense, the arrow of where we're going. We are, in a sense, at the growing tip of evolution. And that's why it does make a difference how we think, and it does make a difference how we act. Here in California, in Silicon Valley, somewhere, I mean, Google is really mapping out our future. Again, they have, you know, an envisioning of what we can become, what we can evolve into. So what Teilhard says is the human person holds a frontier position in evolution. Now here's the thing about Teilhard. It's not just consciousness. It's not just about mind. Rather, he was in dialogue with the physicists of his day. And just as we know today that the prime stuff of life is energy. And it's not really unusual that we have an energy crisis today. That crisis is not just about oil. I think there's a real crisis in human energy. There's something that we're missing out at the heart of the universe. And what Teilhard said is that the core energy in the universe has two directions. He spoke of those directions as tangential energy, or the energy of attraction, and the energy of transcendence. And basically he said, there is a fundamental core energy that keeps things moving together, and as they come together, they transcend where they are. They go beyond themselves. So he says this, the energy of traction is the energy of transcendence. So he speaks of this fundamental law of attraction at the heart of all cosmic life. And this is something that scientists themselves cannot quite deal with. In other words, they do know that there is this kind of fundamental drawing together, even of the fundamental elements in the universe. They can tell you what the forces are, but they cannot tell you why those forces exist. And that's what's so almost, you might say, mysterious here. And so Teilhard says that attraction is a fundamental force that yields more than the sum of the entities themselves. And here's what he calls that fundamental force of attraction. He calls it love energy. Now, that seems right here in California, that sounds like, wow, that seems like something that needs a big daisy with it, right? You know, love energy. But love, if you've ever studied the Middle Ages, Love is not just an emotion, right? Love is the deepest energy that seeks the highest good. Love always goes out of itself to another in the transforming of that other for something more. And that's why he speaks of this energy as love energy. And he says, this love is a cosmological force of attraction. So he says at one point, the force of love energy is present from the Big Bang onward, though indistinguishable from molecular forces. Now, this of course deviates from what scientists would say. Any scientist would say, are you out of your mind to talk about love, you know, and energy in the same breath? And Teilhard, the scientist, said, nope, this is indeed what it's about. Love is the heart of the universe. Attraction, love attracts, love unites. As it unites, it generates new life. And anyone who has known love in some way will know that there's a force of attraction, there's a force of union, and in that union, even friendship, when you form a friendship with another, something, a bond forms between you, and there's something between you that's more than just your individual selves. And that's what he's saying, that this love energy, this force of attraction, is in a sense the same energy of consciousness. So he says, you know, mind is not something separate from matter, but that mind is already within the material universe. That this universe is based on relationality, and you might say informational flow. Now look, you don't have to be a scientist to really figure this out. When you fall in love, your level of consciousness changes, right? You meet someone and you go, wow, you know, that person is fantastic. And when you love someone, you know, you begin to see the world with new eyes. You begin to see things in new ways. And so what Teilhard is saying is love and consciousness is not just on the human level. That, in a sense, marks all of cosmic life. And so he says love energy attracts and transcends towards greater consciousness, which means the two forces in the universe are the force of attraction, or love energy, and you might say the rise of consciousness, or transcendence. So basically we're saying because our consciousness emerges from this cosmic wholeness and continues to be part of it, then what counts for the human mind is active in the universe. We are not here as just separate little beings with the universe as our background. We are here, in a sense, as the thinking universe itself. So what Teilhard says is that the physical structure of the universe is love. Now that is an incredible insight from a scientist. Could you imagine if we began to form our studies and our lives around this type of insight? Teilhard then looked as a Jesuit, as a Catholic theologian, as a Catholic scientist, you know, he then asked, who is the God of this evolutionary universe? It's a good question, because there's something at the heart of this universe that's more than it, that keeps this whole kit and caboodle, 13.8 billion years, it keeps it moving in the level of greater love and greater consciousness. And so he says, who will give evolution its own God? So I read that and I thought, well, I'd just give it a little try this evening, you know. First of all, he says, theology has thought of God too much in terms of a prime mover from the past. Even the language of God, when we use that language of God, people think either sometimes of a grandfatherly image, you know, of a, you know, who's watching over us from above, or, you know, something that's old. Usually when we image God, we picture someone that's old and behind us. But what Teilhard said is that evolution moves us to think of God as drawing the world from up ahead, not behind us, but before us. So he calls this before us, Omega. Omega comes from the scriptures, where God says, I am the Alpha and the Omega. I am the beginning and the end. And that means the end, what we are created for, what this whole kit and caboodle is oriented toward, the absolute future, is already present in the now, in our lives, in this universe. So he sees God Omega present at every level of cosmic life. And he says this, we need to stop worrying about the past because the whole universe is resting on the future as its sole support. In fact, from the point of science today, we can even say, even the point from quantum physics, that there is no real, the only past we have is in our memory, that the past is really what brings us to the present. And the only reality for us now is our openness to the future. And by future, we mean not just tomorrow, but that realm of infinite possibilities, right? Everything is possible in this moment. And we're always living in between many, many different possibilities until we make a decision on any one of them. So he says the universe is resting on this openness to many possibilities, to the future, to that absolute future, which is God. So he says this, he says, you know, religion is too old. That's really what he said, in my words, paraphrasing him. Religion is based on old philosophical principles, on people who are dead, you know, and he says, the foundation of things is not so much how do we, you know, pay, pray, and obey and go to heaven. The foundation of things is resting on the power of attraction. What is attracting us? What is pulling us? What do we hope for? What do we yearn for? He says that power of attraction towards what lies up ahead is the foundation of this cosmos. So, using Teilhard's language, we can say that Omega, that future, from the point of faith, is the absolute love of God. And we're saying that love of God, that love that is our future, we are, putting this another way, we are created for participation in the absolute love of God. But that love is already now present within us and among us. And so even Pope Francis says in his recent encyclical, he says, God's love is the fundamental moving force of all created things. Or as Dante once wrote, it's love that moves the sun and the other stars. The energy of love cannot be in any way diminished. A God who is love is a God who is personal, a God who is relational, a God who is deeply invested in what we become. We call this God Trinity, a God who will share that love with us and draw us into that love through the power of the Spirit. So, you know, we can say a dynamic universe reflects a dynamic God of love. Or as Meister Eckhart, a famous Dominican mystic, said, God is the newest thing there is because love is always new. Where there's real love, we are always pointing to the future, always on the verge of new life. So God is the newest thing there is, the youngest thing there is. God is the beginning. And if we are united to God, we become new again. In our own culture, we have made God old yesterday, back there. And what Meister Eckhart said is, no, God is, you might say, the ever-newness of life, because God is the ever-newness of love. So this is what Teilhard grappled with. He thought, well, look, if this Omega God, this love, empowers us to be relational, to rise in consciousness, if this universe is open to a future that is not yet known, then what is the meaning of Jesus Christ in a universe that is still coming to be? That's a big question that you know, we have yet to really grapple with in the church. Teilhard said this. He said, "What a neo-humanism, a new humanity that looks to the future must have is nothing less than a more profound Christianity rethought to fit the new dimensions of the world." Now here's the thing. He realized that Christianity is the one religion where we say God is really involved in our lives, in our world. And what we're supposed to be about is becoming something new. And he saw that unless we become something new, Christianity has nothing to offer the world. So if we look at, you know, I don't know if you've studied, those of you who have studied religion, you know, our classical understanding of Christ, why did Jesus Christ come? Most people would say to save us from sin. You know, right? Because Adam and Eve fell into sin and we need to be redeemed from that sin and restored to God. That's our operative understanding, what we call original sin. And next week as we celebrate Easter, we'll hear this repeated. If Adam had not sinned, Christ would not have come. But there's a whole other tradition in the church that's been around forever. And it said, really? You think God sent the Son because of a defect in creation? I mean, think about it. We're claiming that God becomes one of us. That's our Christian claim. That's called incarnation, you know? And we say, yeah, God became one of us because of sin. Or as my friend Bill Schwartz would say, why build the Taj Mahal to cover a pothole? Why would God do something so incredible because of a defect in creation? So they said, no, God is love, and from all eternity, God willed Jesus Christ to grace and glory, whether or not sin ever existed or ever entered into this creation. So we call this the primacy of Christ. God is love, and God has willed to share that love from all eternity with a finite creature. So Christ is first in God's intention to love. Like, the whole of Christianity is not based on sin, they say. It's really based on love. Now, it doesn't negate sin. We do get things wrong, and we do make bad choices, believe me. But, you know, the point of this is this. From the beginning of this Big Bang universe, that's what Teilhard's saying. This, you know, so the whole Christian story doesn't begin with us, by the way. Because, you know, we make ourselves so special. We think it all begins, everything is about us. But what he's saying is, no, we're just the last arrivals in this very long universe. So the whole Christian story begins with the universe story. So, you know, Omega, God's love, is shared in the Big Bang itself. So he says creation and incarnation are really two acts of God's self-giving love. In fact, the whole universe, you might say, is Easter. The whole thing is the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And therefore, he calls this Christogenesis, that Christ is not just Jesus alone. Jesus is the Christ, but Christ is more than Jesus. Christ is that love of God now at the heart of all cosmic life. The whole thing is the birthing of the Christ, or what he calls Christogenesis. And he even went on to say that Jesus is not just divine and human, but that the Christ also has a third nature, what we can call a cosmic nature, which means this. Now this, you know, it doesn't seem like much to us, but what we're saying here is this. A, there's nothing in the physical world that does not, that, let me just put it in a positive way, everything in the physical world bears God's love. Everything, whether it's a quark, a star, a little grain of sand, everything expresses the love of God. Everything, you might say, is a little word of the word of God. Now think about that. From the Big Bang on, God is, you might say, coming to us in every single form of creation, created life. You do wonder, how did we get into an environmental crisis, if we really held to this? But so Teilhard calls this the third nature of Christ, that Christ is, you might say, the power of evolution itself. So evolution is not just a physical process. He says, no, evolution is a spiritual process as well. And here's what he thought. He said, well, Christianity is not just a religion of salvation for humans. He said, Christianity is normative of evolution. Christianity is normative of evolution itself. Think of evolution. The whole of evolution is this ongoing process of attraction, convergence, complexity. Something's going on here, he's saying. Something that's a synthesizing process. And he says that Christianity fulfills an essential function in evolution. So he calls this process cosmic personalization. See, our worldview is so wrapped around us, we have no sense of a wider view that the whole cosmos is part and parcel of this Christ mystery. And you might say it just comes to a new level of consciousness in and through the human person. So he says it is not something, it is rather someone in evolution. Now, if we were to put this in our own language and time, why do you keep texting and tweeting everyone? I mean, not that you would be doing that here, but there's something about us that technology does for us, right? It keeps driving us. Why should we be so relational? Why? There's nothing, what is that? Where is that coming from? But we're saying that there's something deep within us that longs for relationship, right? We long to belong to something. And because religion has not satisfied that need, we have transferred that religious dimension of life, I think, to our technology. And what Teilhard does is he calls us back to the fact is, no, the whole of cosmic evolution is deeply relational. And it's moving, it wants to move towards something. And by cosmic personalization, he meant this. The whole of this cosmic life moves towards integral wholeness, a type of oneness, a complexification, or what we might say in our own language today, a global consciousness, where we can begin to think together, a co-reflection, and we have a new level of consciousness. Now, most of you, if I look around, you all look like digital natives to me. But I remember the age when we did not have an understanding of Islam or Buddhism. We didn't even know. I mean, I grew up in New Jersey on the East Coast. I didn't even know California existed. No, that's not true. I did know about it, I'm only kidding. But you see, you have born in an age which is a whole new level of consciousness. You have an awareness of belonging to a globe. You know, I know my own students, you know, they will think about people in India and Africa. That's a very recent phenomenon that's been brought about by the evolution of consciousness through technology. And what Teilhard's saying is that God is at the heart of this. And so he calls this process Christogenesis. So he sees Jesus Christ not just as this historical figure that came and did good things, but Jesus Christ, you might say, is the meaning of the whole of evolution itself. And that's just very hard to get our heads around. That this whole process is leading up to, you might say, the revelation of God in this person of Jesus. It's like Jesus all along, and then one day this guy is born in Nazareth, and it's revealed. This is what God's been doing all along, and now we see the way forward. So Jesus comes on the scene, you know, with a new consciousness, right? The Gospels are about, it's the good news, right? The good news. I mean, how good does it seem to us? People are like, yeah, the Gospels, good news. It doesn't look too good, but, you know, Jesus was like, he challenged people with a new level of awareness. Like, what are you doing? You know, a new sense of relationship, a new sense of wholeness. So Jesus, I think, brings about this new level of love into the cosmos. He was a Jew. You know, Jesus was not Catholic, by the way. He was Jewish. And so he was a Jew who had a new sense of God's imminent presence. Like, stop looking for God up there. Don't think God is, you know, somewhere out there. God is in our midst. That's his message. And that same God who's in our midst has been in the midst all along, the whole of cosmic evolution. So Jesus comes with this sense of newness. The Gospels are about newness. He comes with a sense of a new direction in evolution, a new creativity. He tells the Jews, you know, stop being so nitpicking about the law and start focusing on the human person. Start getting your relationships back in order. His message is really one of vision. Jesus was, what was this? Basically this, you know, what do you see? What do you want? As he asked, you know, the blind man Bartimaeus, what do you want? So what Jesus tells us is God will not force us into anything, right? God doesn't say, hey, you know, you've got to evolve. You're part of this cosmos. You really need to do this. God says, what do you want? Because we are always given the choice, the freedom. And Jesus was about seeing. And so I think we become very blind. You know, we see, but we don't see. We claim to see, but our blindness remains. Because the type of seeing that Jesus calls us to is a new level of consciousness, a new reality, a new awareness of the needs in our midst, the poor, the marginalized, the earth that's abandoned. You know, who's left out of community? Who is lonely? Who is suffering? And so Angela Foligno once said, as we see, so we love, and the more perfectly and purely we see, the more perfectly and purely we love. Jesus saw that there was no separation between him or anyone else. He saw everyone as brother and sister, a new community, a new family. And so his death and resurrection, what we're coming into the Easter season, is not just, gee, are you saved? Saved from what and saved for what? For Jesus, it's about, are you aware that God is in you? That the God of this cosmos now is the God of your life? And are you aware of what it means to belong to this cosmos? And are you willing to act on it? So what Teilhard says is this: we cannot be saved except through the universe and as a continuation of it. There is no place up above called heaven, you know, like we're just gonna hang around here for a few years and then go to heaven. This is it in some ways. I mean, even the scripture says, you know, I don't promise you a new heaven without earth, but a new heaven and a new earth. And so that's why I think Teilhard says that Christianity is a religion of evolution. That's not just a catchy little phrase. That is, you might say, its deepest meaning. And he says this: we are created co-creators. It makes a difference. It makes a difference how you learn. And it makes a difference what you will do with your lives. He says we are part of an ongoing cosmic process that demands our commitment to it. Which means this: where are our minds? Because are we aware of being part of a whole? We know today from science that, again, interconnectivity is our basic reality. We are wholes within wholes. And therefore, all that we do affects the world around us. And here's the thing. I think, you know, using the gospel message, where your mind is, there your treasure lies. No, I wouldn't go here, because you look like you're very attentive this evening. Well, you look like me. So, right, where are our minds at any one moment? And I think this, they're all over the place. And if I look at, you know, where we are today, we sort of lost our minds, really, literally. We have sort of junk food minds. We let everything into our minds, right? They're just informational, you know, fatigued. You know, our bodies are here, our minds are elsewhere. And, you know, Sherry Turkle's book, Alone Together. We're alone together. And we know today that we are not coming together. We're actually, loneliness is increasing, even though we're completely wired. So, you know, the artificial iPhone, which I always like the iPhone because, you know, my world now is centered around me, provides a safe space to share our life without having to deal with pain or rejection. So when we can control our relationships, we have no place for the spontaneity of life. We have no place for, you might say, grace conversion or a new level of awareness. You know, as Terkel says, I'll just use the middle one, she says, once we remove ourselves from the flow of physical, messy, untidy life, we become less willing to get out there and take a chance. And that's why our world is not getting much better, because we find our mind all over creation. And we are less willing, you might say, to come together and to begin to love one another in a new way for a better world. And so we are in the process of making one another disappear by living more of our lives apart from other humans and in the company of our devices. I am more at home with my cell phone than I am with my neighbor. And this is what Teilhard said, and this is very brief. He said he lived at the dawn of the computer age. Teilhard saw what the computer could do for us. He thought that through the computer and the internet, which he predicted, that we could become more unified and more whole. And he calls this new level neurogenesis. We're coming out of cosmogenesis. We live on the level of biological life or biogenesis, and now we're on the level of a new level of shared mind or neurogenesis. But he says this, this new wired mind, this new level of mind through the computer, can be a new possibility for thinking Earth, but it depends how we use it. He says, the success of our evolution will not be determined by the survival of the fittest, but by our own capacity to converge and unify. Basically, in Teilhard's terms, Christogenesis now can only go forward if we come together and unite on the level of consciousness. So he calls this ultra-humanity. He says, we are moving towards something, and we can move towards a new way of life that is deeper, that is more shared, that is a thinking together. But he says, it depends how we control the psychic, spiritual energy needs and powers of our technology. And we sort of have unbridled use of technology. We have no sort of ethics of technology. We just use it as will because we have no overarching sense of where we're going with it. So we do need something of an inner evolution. Evolution is not just the physical life, but we need to slow down. We need to unplug, right? We need something like a cyber Sabbath. And we need to discover for ourselves our own energies of love. Teilhard calls us to have a zest for life. A zest for life, that means to really taste life, to really experience it. He says to connect the conscious self reflecting of human beings, we must connect to the whole planet Earth and the immensity of the universe. We are to know the Earth like we know our own body. We are to harness the spiritual energies of the world by religions coming together. He did not think that Christianity or even that the Christ would be only Catholic, the Catholics or Christians. The whole universe means harnessing all of the energies, all the world's religions, to come together and find a new level of unity, a new level of consciousness together. And then he thought that we must think anew. We must think in a new way for a new future. He calls this whole process planetization. That's a big term. He thought big. If you're studying big history, Teilhard had big thoughts. And he thought that, you know, this world, this globe, can move to a new level of planetized unity. And by that he meant a new thinking together. In fact, Teilhard's ideas were very influential on the formation of the United Nations. Unfortunately, that has not taken off in the way it was originally conceived. But co-reflection, religious conversion, a new heart and mind. Could you imagine a new world where we would have, you might say, a new sense of heart and mind in the world? With our brothers and sisters in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in sub-Saharan Africa, in Russia, in Micronesia, throughout the world of thinking together as a new unity and a deepening of love. And this is what Teilhard said. We are moving towards something. And if we don't move, if we don't make the decisions, others will make them for us. And it may not be towards the fruitfulness of life itself. He said, God is at the heart of this whole process of life. But this is a God of absolute love and absolute freedom. We have the choice. You know, who do we love? What do we love? Where do we focus our minds and where do we focus our hearts? In Teilhard's view, love alone can bring us to the threshold of another universe. In fact, in some ways, in many ways, we will be saved by love. Thank you. Yes, I would agree. I think hatred and violence devolve us. So if evolution is moving towards greater levels of unity and consciousness, devolution thins us out, right? We become fragmented. Yes?
So is love the bridge of religion and history in a way?
Yes, I would say so. I mean, at least using Teilhard's paradigm, yes. I think we can say that. But love, just again, not love as emotion, love as the highest good. That's what we're talking about here, that deepest good. Yes, I like that, actually. It's a good thought. Good. All right, you did good. Sitting here for an hour.
Thanks, everyone.
This is Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu. You have been listening to Sister Ilia Delio speaking about co-creating an unfinished universe. This evening's broadcast was brought to you by the First Year Experience Big History Program at Dominican University of California. The director of Big History is Daniel May. The coordinator for Big History and the producer of this evening's event was Maggie Hibbert. This event was also co-sponsored by Dominican's Campus Ministry, Director Reverend Dr. Robert Haberman, Assistant Director Leonie Castro, Campus Minister Sister Christina Atienza, and Assisting Minister Reverend Dr. Craig Singleton. I'm Joyce Chu from Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, which is brought to you by the School of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences, where our dean is Dr. Laura Stivers, and our Communication and Media Studies chairperson is Brad Van Alstine. Our Penguin Radio Executive Director is Stuart Horn, and our Managing Director is Leona George Davidson. Again, I'm Joyce Chu. Thanks for listening to Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu. Have a great night.